Hi, I'm Kathleen McCarthy, and you're listening to What the World Needs Now, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. I invite you to join me in this hour of God's healing power. Call and join us in conversation and prayer. Remember, what the world needs now is God, and God is love.
And welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host for the next hour, Ken Johnston, and I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners and all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. All your prayerful and financial support that's kept us on the air for some 40 years and allows us to continue to bring you great shows like today's. And today I am joined by Robert Gannon, Bob Gannon, and Kathleen has gotten to know him over the years, and she reached out to me probably back in July or August, and mentioned that he had published a book, and could I bring him on the air? And I only had a minute to talk to you, Robert, before we got started. And again, our guest today is Robert Gannon. Welcome to the show, Robert. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thank you, Ken.
Appreciate it. Yeah, and so when we got the date lined up, you were kind enough to send a copy of the book over, and I mentioned to you just in the moment that we had before the show that I'm not a great reader and certainly not a fast one, but we happened to be at our house up the mountains, and Sunday afternoon was dreary, and I started reading the book, and 4 hours later I was done. I couldn't put it down. It was just one page turned into the next, and I'll be honest, I was really looking forward to the miracle, and it did not disappoint. So, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us. And I'll be honest, the ministry that I'm involved in, other than the radio with Our House Ministries, with a great priest, Father Douglas McKay, I had befriended his brother Harry, who passed away a few years back now. Harry was a Marine who really struggled with PTSD, and it was those nightmares that you talk about in the book that he struggled with, and during one of them actually caused him to leap out of bed, and he fell and hit his head in such a way that it broke his neck and left him paralyzed from the neck down for 14 months before he passed. And this guy, he's like you. He ended up helping so many men that struggled with PTSD as a result of the things that they experienced in Vietnam. And there's another guy that he brought around who I actually talked to yesterday. I see him almost every Tuesday. We call him Boston Bob. And he met Harry through the VA when they were going for help with their PTSD. And I bring that up because as many people, and I don't know a whole lot, I'm 68 years old. I came in I'm 60, and came when I was 18. They had done away with the draft, and so, you know, guys my age, a lot of us, you know, never got drafted, didn't go in the military and what have you. And so the folks that I would know that went to Vietnam, I would see in the workplace, and then Harry and Bob, but none of them would ever talk about, you know, what they saw. And I got it, you know, I get it, you know, it's probably one of the hardest things to talk about. And so when I picked up your book and I thought about a guy, Gary Donahue, that I sat next to for 5 years at work that was a Vietnam vet, and I think about Harry and I think about Bob and, you know, the things that went on, and I'm sure their stories aren't identical to yours, but they're similar. And, you know, we're seeing it ever since then, right? The guys that are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. And so, you know, first and foremost, I want to thank you for your service to the country and what you did. And more importantly, your willingness to share your experience. And what we say in the AA rooms, right, your experience, strength, and hope, not necessarily about alcohol, but with PTSD. because I think for at least when I was coming up, it wasn't something that we heard a whole lot about, and we hear so much about it today. And it's guys like you and the efforts that you make that can help relieve some of that suffering. So thank you.
Thank you.
So I don't want to assume, but I'm thinking that the book was a result of some of the work you've done, and you've helped a ton of people, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But we're able to help them with in the alcohol field. But I guess you felt that putting your life on paper might be able to help some of your fellow servicemen. Is that right?
Yeah, kind of got started by accident. Well, you read about the miracle, and that kind of got out, and people asked me to speak at a Catholic conference about it, and when I did, the reception I got was pretty unbelievable. You couldn't even hear a pin drop in that place, and people came up to me afterwards, and especially the families of veterans, and said, "Now I understand why my brother, my son, my husband went through." A lot of them had a lot of guilt feelings. Maybe their son came back and isolated himself from the family, and they thought maybe something they did. And it also helps veterans look at yourselves. We begin to isolate ourselves, and we don't know why. And every time, we run across that fear factor, like say you're going to Lowe's or something, and something sets you off, get your anxiety going, you leave. Well, the next time it becomes worse, and you have to learn to overcome that, to go back the next day, and go back the next day. Don't be defeated. And that's what happens to us is we run from it because we don't recognize it. And same with our families, Johnny go to family functions for years, Christmas and all that. Christmas is a terrible time for veterans, We really don't feel we deserve Christmas.
And when you say you don't deserve it, you don't deserve it because of so many of your brothers and I guess now sisters that don't get to celebrate Christmas anymore?
Well, I think so.
Survivor's guilt?
Survivor's guilt, yeah. Right. Yeah. Why?
Yeah. Yeah, and I see the same thing, and I can't ever compare, what I went through with my, alcoholism and the ministry that I'm involved in now, especially with the opioid epidemic, and, in the 93,000 people that overdosed last year, right. and the work that, you continue to do in the prisons and what have you, that, we kind of get it. But there's often times where I can sit in a meeting or working with other people and they're always saying, how come I got this gift and my brother didn't, or my father didn't. And I used to ask those questions early on. I don't ask anymore. Cause I think like you, God had another purpose for us, and that's why he allowed us to stick around and help us to deal with, the things that we went through so that we can be a benefit to others. And you've done a bang up job of that. So, but it took a while for all this to unfold, right? So you come up as a young boy in the Midwest, on a farm, if I'm not mistaken.
Small farm, yeah.
Yeah. And not an easy childhood either, right?
No, very, very dysfunctional family. My dad was an alcoholic, very abusive, put you down. My mom was a very angry person. When I went to school, I had dyslexia, and it was just a two-room schoolhouse. We grew up in a town of like 90 people.
Mm.
And then when you can't read, well, you're just considered dumb. You're actually considered, retarded, I think. And I was left-handed, and I didn't believe anybody should be left-handed. So they tried to switch my hands, and they they would think I was trying to write my left hand and make them mad, and they'd take me back to the classroom with a dunce hat on my head, you know. So I went through childhood of you know, really being put down. My parents every day call me a dumb and stupid, you'll never amount to nothing. So, you know, that's some deep wounds that that takes a long, long time to overcome.
And yeah, go ahead. So with the rough upbringing, and I liked reading about the town, you know, every town had a ball team, but if you wanted to do anything, you had to walk miles, right? Or ride a bike for miles. And, you know, I think about, you know, the things, you know, I'm not in the city, I'm just outside the city, and, you know, you can get the most things in 5 minutes, and mom and dad driving you everywhere you need to go. And, you know, so as hard a life as it sounds, you know, I could picture some of the you and your buddies and some of the things that you were doing. And even though it may have been a rough childhood, there had to be some bright spots.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was, you know. You know, we had dogs, we hunted, we fished. I think, you know, the only really rough time was probably the school system and my home life, you know. So, you know, I escaped that by, you know, a lot of times by working on different farms. You know, I grew up working really hard. It was really poor, you know. So I was always working out. And yeah, I don't regret my childhood one bit, you know. I think if it wasn't for my childhood, I wouldn't have the compassion to do what I do, to go in prisons and jails. And, you know, I'm 79 years old, and I'm still lead a chemical dependency group on Thursday nights and, you know, working missions and stuff, because I know what it feels to be humiliated. I know what it feels to feel that you have no self-worth, you know, and and I have a story to tell, you know.
That's right.
from all that to pretty good success in life.
Yeah. And so, when it came time in your teen years, you know, maybe the little story about how you ended up with the Marines.
Yeah, I went to join the Navy, and because I wanted to travel, and I thought, boy, getting on a ship, you know, floating around would be great. So I went up, and the Navy guy was out to lunch, and the Marine Corps was right next door, you know. And so the guy said, "Come on in here, boy, and sit down." And started looking through these books, and I saw, boy, they were shooting and camping and all that. And I thought, well, heck, that's right up my alley. So I joined the Marine Corps. You know, I see God guiding my life at a very, very young age. What happened to me in the Marine Corps really changed me. You know, I mean, it gave me some real courage, you know, how I wound up being a recon Marine. And like I say, it wasn't intentional.
Yeah, and when I happened to mention that to Bob yesterday, I was letting him know that you were going to be on the show today, and I mentioned that you were a recon Marine, and he's like, and you'd have to hear Bob the way he talks. But anyway, you know, I guess he equates the recon Marines to maybe the Rangers in the Army, and
more like the Navy SEALs.
So you guys are the ones that you go in first, often behind enemy lines, trying to scope out what the enemy is up to. I guess get their, you know, numbers, locations, and what have you, and somehow communicate that back to the other guys to let them know what you're up against.
Yeah, we operate anywhere probably from 5 to 40 miles behind enemy lines. You know, we weren't really carried a lot of stuff for fighting in them days. We carried a lot of communications equipment. But, yeah, we watched villages and stuff, you know, where they felt a lot of enemy activity. When they thought the enemy was massing, they would drop us in. We dropped in 4-man teams in them days, try to find them, try to find their supply points. Yeah, it was yeah, I can remember one time they dropped us out on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And the Ho Chi Minh Trail was a lot of fingers of different trails where they carried their supplies. And they had dropped the B-52s, had dropped a lot of time bombs in. And my map was marked up with these time bombs. You know, I think it was 2,000-pound or 5,000-pound when they was going to go off and to make sure that we wasn't, you know, in that area when one of them bombs went off. I think that was kind of one of the... But it's a very special group of men, you know. Time you get through the recon training, like I said, there's only 1% selected, and only half of that make it. It's tough. And I had opportunity to train a short time with the Navy SEALs in the Philippines. So that was my confidence builder in my life when I made it through all that.
Yeah, I can imagine. When I said it to Bob, he said the same thing. It's only 1%. He said he'd never make it because he couldn't swim. And, you know, the amount of time you would send in that small group behind enemy lines, having to be quiet. You talk about how close sometimes the enemy would pass, and, you know, trying to make sure that you weren't found out and what have you. And that's why it was a page turner, at least for me, to see how this actually went on, and the way that you explained it, I felt like I was right there, and not in a glorified sense, but and not horror either, but somewhere in between, you know, to really understand, you know, what you guys did. I mean, putting your lives on the line, day in and day out. And something that, like you said, when you saw the book in the recruiter's spot, you know, and you're going to go camping and hiking and living in the woods, it was a far cry from that. And it seemed like that you got there pretty quick.
Yeah, well, you know, I wrote the book so that it could be read by children. There's nothing gory in the book. I think you can probably visualize a lot of it, and it's a Christian book, and you know, I wrote it for several reasons, and one was to help people like me that come up in dysfunctional homes and abusive homes and have learning disabilities, that you're not really dumb. You know, when somebody puts you down, you know, if God didn't put you down, don't worry about it, because God made everybody, like you said earlier, with a special mission in mind, and some of us just have to go through a lot more to be able to serve him where he wants. And that's how I feel about my life. You know, he put me through all this so I could be where I'm at today, helping veterans' families, understanding the drug addict, working with those who came out of abusive homes and learning disabilities. God gave me a story to tell, you know, for each one of them.
Very good. So just to remind our listeners, our guest today is Robert Gannon, and we're talking about the book he wrote called Never Give Up, and highly encourage that you get it. I saw that it was available on Amazon. If you want to get in touch with Bob or the publishers, it's through an email address, nevergiveup.pub, like publisher, .co@gmail.com. That's nevergiveup.pub.co@gmail.com, but pick up the book on Amazon. You will not be disappointed.
And yeah, if they want an autographed copy, they can email. I'm going to give you a phone number too, because if there's some veterans out there and some veteran families that want to talk about getting in help, or, you know, get some help or where they can go, and some of the programs I went to, I want them to call me. You know, I'll spend some time with them. Can I give that phone number?
No, please? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. It's 417-737-4107. And if they want an autographed copy, we do the same price as Amazon. We'll pay for the shipping. We're not here to make a lot of money, but we're here to help people. That's what the book is wrote for, you know, to...
Very good. Again, our guest is Bob Gannon, and I'll just repeat that number, and we'll give it out again before the end of the show. But the number is 417-737-4107. I also, Bob, want to let folks know that The shows do get recorded, and so if you come on late and miss the beginning, or you want friends or family or somebody that you think might benefit from this particular show, that we'll get the recording, and I'll make sure it's on the website by tomorrow morning, so you can listen to it again or pass along the information again. It'll be at inhissign.com, and you click on content, and you can look at the podcast of a lot of shows, not just today's, but I think this one in particular you want to share with those folks, especially I said as I was introducing you, Bob, the guys that have come back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and especially in light of what's going on just in recent months, that I can't imagine that there won't be a huge spike in the cases of PTSD. So I want to thank you again for putting that out there. And so you're doing your job as a recon Marine, and goes on for I guess your first tour was 2 years, 3 years?
No, my first tour was 14 months.
14. Okay, so all this in 14 months.
Then I came back to the States for 2 years. Then I went back for my second tour, and that's when I got injured.
Yeah.
Had medical discharge.
Right. But it was during the first tour, I believe, when would result in the nightmares, right, with the village?
Yeah, that was the worst of the nightmares, the village. Did you want me to explain that, or do you want to explain it? Or
No, I you can explain it far better than I can, that's for sure. And for our listeners, too, a lot of times this interview is a little bit different. I interview a lot of authors, Bob, and a lot of times they don't want to tell everything that's in the book, because obviously they want people to buy the book. And I can assure our listeners that the tidbits that you're getting here, there's a lot more in the book, and that you really need to get a copy of this thing. But yeah, I think you could explain that, what happened with the village far better than I could.
Yeah. I think it was in the first part of 1966. They thought there was a battalion of Viet Cong massing. It was about 15 miles from we stationed out of Chu Lai, Vietnam, right then. And they sent me and four of the Marines in to see if we could find them, to see if they, if they were massing to launch an attack. And they dropped us in by helicopter, and we made our way to a little mountain. And and in front of the mountain was a rice paddy, and then just beyond that was a village. And about the second day, about, 30 or 40, I can't remember how many of them came out and started training. And I decided to call artillery on them. And a lot of times you fire a spot around, which is because artillery, a lot of things affect the accuracy of artillery, wind, moisture in the air, and all that. And I decided if I fired a spot around, they just fire one round, and then you make any corrections off of it to fire the rest. So I decided to fire the spotter round, they'll just run off in the jungle. We won't be able to inflict any damage on them. So I said fire for effect. Well, the rounds fell short, and they hit the village. And I had 16 guns firing for me. And I told them to cease fire, but we far enough off, we had a radio relay team, and the time they got the radio relay team to the command, to the artillery, they fired another volley, and I say in the book, as I heard them 16 booms, and I just started praying, God, please don't let these rounds hit the village, too, and they did, and we watched houses being blown up. It was like a big church or school that went down. And it was just an eerie silence for, just a little bit. And then people started screaming and crying. And all through the night, there was fires. We couldn't get out because the Viet Cong were all around us. They knew we were there somewhere. So we had to stay put for a couple of days on this little knoll we was on. And so the next day, we watched them bury people, And, I was in shock. I couldn't believe it. I'm 24 years old, and all I could think of, I just killed a lot of people. And my mind was thinking how many people in them houses, how many children were hurt, how many of them were injured. And that nightmare just never went away. But when I retired, it just consumed me. Mm. That and losing my men, you know, when they were ambushed after I was injured. Took me almost to suicide. I was at the point, I just couldn't really carry on anymore.
So how soon after that incident, time-wise, Bob, was it before the tour ended and you came back to the States?
Probably about 6 more months, and then I came back to the States, and I went to Wilmington, North Carolina for a while. Now I was transferred to Wilmington, Delaware, where I made casualty notifications, and that's something that they say now that should have never happened to a combat sergeant, is coming from war and then notifying for 18 months. I made casualty notifications and then going back to Vietnam. Now I've seen both sides of it, and I still sometimes have a nightmare of us parking and walking up along sidewalk to a house, you know, and knowing the horror when they knock on that door and open it and see you, you know. It just, so, and then I went back to Vietnam, and I think my second tour was so traumatic because I knew what the families were going through, and I just felt I had to get everybody home. I just became a fanatic of trying to get everybody home, and you can't. And so I lived with them two nightmares, you know, on my second tour. And I would have dreams like at Christmas time especially. You know, I really isolated myself at Christmas. Like I say in the book, I didn't want to buy anybody presents. I didn't want anything. I'd always have this vision of people sitting around a table eating their Christmas meal, and it was this empty chair, you know, and there was a sadness. And all I could think about, if I'd have been a better platoon sergeant, if I'd have been better. That's what a lot of veterans live with.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of veterans, it's definitely not a lack of courage, but they just can't tell the story that you're telling today. And I can hear it in your voice, how hard it is. And the fact that God has given you the ability to tell it is it's not only a gift to you, but it's a gift to us and a gift to everybody that you've been able to help as a result of being given the courage to do this. And so we're going to need to take a break in just a minute. And so when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about all the good stuff that's come of this. But what eventually was it that got you sent home?
I took a bad fall in my second tour. And carrying a guy was coming off of a mountain where a plane had crashed and sent us up there to, you know, destroy the, and just before we got back to the base, we was at a place called LZ Stud, and we got hit, and a guy got hurt coming off the mountain, and I was carrying him, and when we went over this ditch, I thought was a small ditch, it was like, I don't know, 10 or 12 foot down. I had about 100 pounds of ammo and stuff on my back, had him on my back, and it just ripped my ligaments, you know, totally out. And I went on for probably 2 or 3 weeks. My legs got so bad, my ankles would slip in and out. I taped them up. But finally, one of them went out so bad one time, it swelled up, so turned black. I couldn't even get my boot on. But, you know, and I have a lot of guilt over that, you know. I was a platoon sergeant, and it's your job to die with your men, you know. My platoon got ambushed shortly after that, and I live with that guilt, you know.
Yeah.
Still do today. I've never got.
Yeah, but in the battlefield prayer that you wrote, and it's found in the beginning of the book, and you know, the guys that you left behind, and those that you may feel the guilt for. When I've read the prayer a few times, and I read it again today, and it reads, "God, I'm not asking you to spare my life, but to give me the courage to get through this day. If my courage should fail me, please don't let me leave this battlefield alive, because I could never face my men, my family, or myself." And this is a prayer you wrote while you were there, but you never gave up the courage. I mean, the fact that you're, you know, not only carrying 100 pounds of ammo, but one of your fellow combatants on your back trying to get them to safety when the injury occurs, it's definitely not from lack of courage. And I guess in some ways it's a shame that it happened that way, but it by the same token, it was only because of that injury that you couldn't continue to go on like you were, and came back. And because you did, you're able to tell the story that you're telling us today.
And, yeah.
You know,
one comforting thing I always said to myself, you know, I'll never leave my men unless they carry me off in a stretcher. And they did carry me off in a stretcher. I went and messed up my leg for life because I kept going. But I had that satisfaction that, you know, I don't know what that means to anybody, but to me,
right,
that means a lot that I went until I had nothing left to give.
Amen. Again, our guest today is Robert Gannon. The book that he wrote is called Never Give Up. Highly recommend it. And, Bob, we've gone a little bit past the bottom of the hour, so we're just going to take a short break, maybe grab something to wet your whistle, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the good stuff.
All right.
So for our audience, I hope you're and enjoy is not the right word, but I hope you're as enthralled with the story as I am, and I encourage you not to go away, because we're coming right back.
Hi, this is Maria Richardson. I've been working in church ministry for many years, and I want to take this opportunity to thank God for Kathleen McCarthy. Kathleen is an amazing woman of God who has been blessed with many gifts and talents for his service. She is so connected to Jesus, and his Holy Spirit speaks through her in so many ways, through her words, her actions, her prayers, and her wisdom. Kathleen has been an inspiration and a mentor to me personally for so long, and it is a great joy to know that In His Sign Radio has allowed her to become a blessing to so many people. She is a gift that must be shared, and I, for one, am very grateful. God bless you.
To you, our faithful family of listeners, no words can express how much we appreciate your standing in the gap with us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. It is truly your amazing prayer power, your undaunting commitment, that has enabled us to stay on the air, no doubt about it. Be assured of our daily prayers, not only for you, but for your families as well. We pray that God will continue to bless you as you bless us. To join us and become a ministry partner, visit our website at inhissign.com or give us a call at 610-527-2906.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. Your host, Ken Johnston, and I want to thank you so much for all that you do for us here at In His Sign, both your financial and prayerful support that allows us to bring you great shows like today's. And I don't want to waste time because we only have about 24 minutes left, Robert. And we got some ground to cover and maybe even be able to open up the phone lines. Our guest today is Robert Gannon, and the book we're talking about is called Never Give Up. Robert was a recon Marine, did two tours in Nam. If you've just joined us during the first segment, we talked about his childhood, how he wanted to be join the Navy to sail around the world and ends up becoming a Marine. Does two tours in Vietnam, like a lot of our brothers that saw that were there. Saw some pretty gruesome stuff. And before we went to the break, we talked about the injury he sustained jumping into a ditch with 100 pounds of ammo plus one of his comrades on his back that did permanent damage to his legs and entered, resulted in him coming home. And it sounds like that those injuries still affect you up to this day. And like any show that we do, Bob, a lot of times I get authors on and we're talking about stuff that's going on in the Catholic Church or in the world, and especially in these days, there's a lot of bad news. And I always like to make sure that we give plenty of good news. So I think in the first half of the show, we laid out the bad. We laid out, the things that happened to you, and not only to you, but many of the men that you fought beside. And so you come home after your second tour and have to recuperate from your injuries. And then you dedicate a chapter in the book to mapping out your life afterwards. So obviously it's a young man. So 24, how old were you when you came out?
27.
I went
in 17 and came out at 27. Almost had 10 years.
Yeah. And so you have to plan out a life. You're still a young man. Figure out what you're going to do. You mentioned in the book that you went to the Lynn Tech and studied and some of the work that you had done. You met your wife and end up raising a family, and but not easy, I guess. So you still had all the struggles from, and obviously PTSD, and maybe that wasn't identified early on, but certainly dealing with your life up till that point, right?
Yeah. well, you know, it's kind of interesting because I always thought God was against me. You know, growing up in the home and left-handed. Dyslexia. So when I got out, when I got hurt, I was really angry. You know, I remember saying, you know, here I am, you know, staff sergeant, you know, getting ready to make E7, which ain't going to go to E9. I didn't have 10 years in here. So here I am, you know, starting over again, no education. And so I decided to go to Lynn Tech. And, you know, because of being a recon Marine, it changed my whole perspective of life. I didn't care anymore. Failing was not never in my vocabulary no more. I didn't care if I went to school, if I flunked half my courses, I'm going to succeed no matter what I do. And that's what I did. I took the test for electronics. I flunked it. I threw it with a sixth grade education. Nobody gave me a chance. And, wound up with two social degrees. Got a job with a great company. It was a great company. I worked for 33 years.
And, And so you get into, and I'm just flipping through the book, so I'm trying to get it in the right order. So you find recovery before the miracle, right?
Pardon?
So as a result of what you'd gone through, I guess you would turn to alcohol at some point in order to...
I start drinking probably as soon as I came back from Vietnam. You can't sleep, you know. Never slept more than 3 hours a night. I was always the first one to work. But, you got that pain in you, and it caused you a lot of other things, you know, besides drinking, you know, you start hanging in bars, and then you know, here you go, you know, you're going to get yourself messed up, you know. And that's what happened to me, you know. I not only, you know, get off work and go to a tavern and you meet somebody and here you go. I mean, you got that pain, and that's what causes veterans to drink, you know, and have multiple affairs and multiple marriages, is always trying to find some kind of relaxation or to get away from that pain, you know. And that's what happened to me, you know. And then when I retired, I totally fell apart. I was a workaholic and totally fell apart when I retired.
And so completely fell apart. And in our recovery terms, we talk about hitting bottom. And I guess at some point you hit a pretty bad bottom, huh?
Yeah. Well, I had been to several marriages, you know, and that was all my fault. I mean, and I was in St. Louis, working in South St. Louis, and I was sitting in my truck, and I remember pulling up to a stop sign, and I just couldn't look at myself anymore, you know. I mean, we can lie to everybody but ourselves, and I just start crying. I had probably crying in years. I was at a stop sign, and something tapped me on the shoulder in my truck and said, "It's almost over." And I remember thinking, how could God even care about me after the life I've led, you know? But there he was with all his sympathy. And the next day, the very next morning, my life started changing.
And when you say it started changing, in what way?
Well, you know, I pretty well quit drinking. I was still having the flashbacks and all that, but I became stable. I met a lady about a year and a half. Her name was Judy, you know. She's passed away now. But she took me to church, and wasn't a Catholic church at that point, but took me to church, and I got involved in a lot of ministries and did good. And I was still struggling. I still couldn't sleep. I still was isolating myself more and more over the time, you know. She really helped me be stable, because, you know, she didn't drink. She was a pretty devout Christian, and she helped me stay on a fairly decent path.
And so it was in that church or the one nearby that you found Celebrate Recovery?
I started Celebrate Recovery. We transferred to Springfield, Missouri, and I got involved going into a jail for about 3 years. I saw that some people had started a Celebrate Recovery program, and they wanted somebody to go into the Fordland prison and take it into Fordland prison. And so they found me, and I went through all the training. They sent me out to California for training, and I took Celebrate Recovery into the prison at Fordland and became one of the most successful with Celebrate Recovery programs in the nation. Became a model program. You want me to tell you about that, or have I got time?
Yeah. No, you have time. I mean, because the impact that you've had, and, you know, after this show, we're going to be in touch, because I'm actually part of I don't want to say it's a Catholic Celebrate Recovery, but another organization called the Calyx Society, and we've actually had some of our people say, you know, we're losing Catholics to Celebrate Recovery, and I know very little about it, so it won't be part of this show, but at some point, I'd love to be able to talk to you in more depth about it. But yeah, if you would, because I think that your story is a little bit unique in that not everybody in Celebrate Recovery is obviously a Vietnam vet that struggles with PTSD. But in your situation, with the experience that you talked about as a kid, the experience and the PTSD from Vietnam, that you really are uniquely qualified to help men, especially those that are in prison. So, yeah, if you would, Bob. Maybe,
yeah, I'll make it short. It's a really interesting story. Well, I took some recovery, and you know, some recovery is different leadership positions, and they told me don't use any of them. Run it yourself because you can't train the inmates. I mean, you can't trust them.
Right.
So I went in, and I don't know, for about 3 months, and I wasn't doing very good at all. You know, drilling about 20 people. So I decided to go against the rules. That's what I kind of do in life, anyhow. And I trained the inmates to run the program. And when I turned it over to them, I mean, we went from 20 people on a Friday night to about 80 or 90. Then we started the step study, which I guess you know what that is. You know, it's you break down in groups. You go through a real in-depth study of your life. It takes about 6 or 8 months. Once the group is started, nobody's allowed in it. You know, it's just, it gets that personal. And I would just go in and open the doors and sit down, and they would, we outgrew one building we was in within 2 weeks. Within a month, we outgrew that, and they put us in a visitor center on a Saturday night, and we could. And on the step study alone, we outgrew that within about 2 months, so we had to go to Sunday night. There was about 600 men in that prison, and we had about 100, between 140 and 160 in the step study. And then we had an introductory night on Friday night. We'd have about 100 coming to that.
Wow.
And it was just amazing. But I'll tell you about a little miracle that happened. You know, I knew the men never had a certificate or reward. So there was four different books of the step study. And so I thought, every book I'll give them an award. And so I had the secretary pick out one of the awards, and she picked out a little blue bracelet, you know, it said Celebrate Recovery on it. So the first group that got that bracelet, I don't do a lot of in-depth checking on stuff, but I violated the prison uniform code.
That's right.
And I'm telling you, I went in on a Friday night, and the time I hit the front gate, they start chewing me out, the sergeant of the guard, lieutenant of the guard, guys, men were thrown in the hole.
Oh,
and,
man.
And it was bad. It was really bad. And go ahead. Am I interrupting you?
No. Go ahead.
So I said, okay, guys, I'll get another award. But they wanted them blue bracelets. They said, Bob, when we're on the yard, we can identify our brothers, you know. And so they said, we're going to form prayer groups, and you write a letter to the warden. And I tried to talk them out of it because I said, there's no way the warden's ever going to change. The guards were telling me, Bob, you're crazy. Some of them have been in the prison system for 30 years. Nobody's going to change the uniform code for them blue bracelets, especially a Christian group. So I wrote the letter, and it was on Friday night. I was going out there thinking, okay, I got to think of some way to make this positive, you know, when he calls me and tells me, you know, not going to happen. The phone rings, and it was my cell phone rang, and it was a prison, the warden secretary, and she said, Bob, the warden just approved them bracelets. And I remember thinking, I'm taking the gospel to these guys.
Yeah.
You know? And it was so impact that the warden had to send out 3 letters to the guards before they believed that it actually happened. And I think that was a miracle.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Again, our guest today is Robert Gannon, and the book that he's written is called Never Give Up. And we've only got about 10 minutes left. And, you know, the highlight in the book and the highlight of your life comes in the form of a miracle. But before the miracle, you know, you have to let folks know what was going on in the nightmares that set the stage for that miracle.
Yeah, I would have nightmares. Of the village, you know, and what would happen. And then a little girl would appear. And she would just stand there and look at me. And she was about 7 or 8 years old. And on the left side of her face was a scar. And I would try to reach out to hold her, you know, and tell her that I was sorry. But every time I'd reach out to hold her, she would disappear. Mm. And so this went on for 30 years, I guess, maybe longer, you know. And so I was working down in Texas, and I had retired, and the company had hired me back to do some work. And I was working down in Texas, and I never could stand to hear a child scream or cry after what happened to the village. I was just going in panic mode, and the village would come back, and I would have flashbacks for days of what happened. And I went to Walmart, and as a child, and I needed to pick up some supplies. I really needed. And a child started screaming and crying. The time I got out of that store, I was in full-blown flashback mode. I was crying. I got in my truck, and I was crying so hard I could hardly drive. And the village, you know, the explosions, the screams, you know, it was just going over and over my mind. And I heard a guy fall off a water car and died. And all I could think about, if I just climbed that water car and let go, you know, it'd all be over.
Yeah.
And I started having out-of-body experiences. Like, I climbed the car and let go, and I could feel myself floating through the air. And God, I felt good. I mean, I just felt everything was gone. I don't even remember ever feeling that good in my life, you know. And I knew Satan was trying to get me in my life. And the only person I ever knew, because I was like every other veteran. My family didn't even know what I did. I never ever told them anything about. They didn't know I was a recon Marine. I never even told them that. And so all I could think about was that little girl, you know. And I said, little girl, you're the only one in my life that knows what's going on, you know. I just want to see you. And God put a picture of that little girl beside my eyelids. And I just shut my eyes, and there she'd be, you know. And she helped me get home for the next 3 days. And we had plans. We got horses when we ride, and we had plans to go to a place called Kenya Mountain, Arkansas. It's a beautiful place. You can look it up on the internet, Kenya Mountain. And we went down there, and I think it was the second one. I started praying in Novena. When I got home, I started praying in Novena to St. Therese, because I knew I was. Are you still there?
Yep.
I knew my life was coming to an end. I just couldn't hang on much longer. And so we went down to the camp, and about the second or third day was there, a couple came from Peoria, Illinois, 600 miles, and they had a little girl I seen in my dreams. She was the same size, everything about her hair was going the same, the build, and that scar on the left side of her face, I can't remember the medical name for it, but it had been there for a long time. They had just taken it off, and I'm really abbreviating the story, I'm counting time.
Yeah.
But the next day I got to hold her, you know, was getting ready to leave, and I'm thinking in my mind, I need to hold this little girl, I kept telling me, and my wife's paying her bill, and her mom came up and sat down right next to me, and I told her a story, and I thought, just let you know, think I'm crazy, you know, and she didn't. She just handed me a little girl, and got up and left, and when 80, the little girl's name is 80, when she laid her head,
okay.
My shoulder.
Yeah.
I could feel the outline of her body getting warm and tickling. And that was the last days of my nightmares. They went away, and the flashbacks went away. Flashbacks of losing my men, you know. I mean, it's still emotional, but I've never had a dream since. I never had a flashback since that day. It was a miracle that God formed in my life. So I have contact with her.
Yeah. and
special needs child because of he has disease too, and that's in the book. But I asked the priest one time, I said, how can this little girl have so much influence over me? And he said, because she's special needs, she fear. She's without sin, and God can use them kind of children.
Wow. You know, I reread the miracle today as that chapter in the book and getting ready for the show, and I teared up then. I'm welled up now. And, you know, the miracle occurred in your life. It also impacted her life with some of the physical things that she was experiencing, right, that seemed to have stopped at the time. And we only have a couple minutes left, Bob, so I want to make sure folks know. Again, the name of the book is Never Give Up. There's a lot more detail in the book than what was covered in an hour show today. The author is Robert Gannon, who's been on the line. He's also graciously offered his phone number to any vets that may want to get in touch with him. The number,
families.
Vets and their families. That phone number is 417-737-4107. Again, 417-737-4107. You can also get in touch with Bob if you want to get an autographed copy of the book. He'll be happy to charge you the same price as Amazon and give you free shipping. So get in touch with him for the book as well. And, you know,
Bob, never give up.
No, absolutely never give up. Never give up.
That's the email address in case you want to.
Yeah, so the email address as well is nevergiveup.pub.co@gmail.com. So it's short for Never Give Up Publishing Company. nevergiveup.pub.co@gmail.com. So you can use that to get in touch with Bob as well as the phone number. And as I said before we went to the break, this is for me is really a special show, and I think obviously people stumble on and may not have heard it from the beginning. So I'll be sure to make sure that the recording gets put up tonight and by tomorrow morning at the latest, maybe even tonight. People will be able to access this show on the web and pass along the link to friends and family. And Bob, I know this isn't easy for you, and I can't thank you enough for spending the hour with us, for the work that you're doing. I thank God for allowing you to do it, and I'm sure you hear it all the time, but you know, at least one more time from me, that you are a gift. That God, that you know, for those of us that eventually find out what our purpose in life is, and that God keeps us around long enough to figure out what it is, and then give us the courage to do it. Man, it's such a blessing, and you've been a blessing to me, getting to know you through the book and in this last hour, and I'm sure for our guests as well. So thank you.
You know, too, if anybody wants me to speak at their event, just get a hold of me, because I do a lot of speaking now, especially with Kathleen. I've spoken with her several times. She's a great gift, I'll tell you that. She's a blessing.
Amen. That's how I found out about you. She passed it along and said I had to have this guy on the radio, and I'm glad we finally did it. We're out of time, Bob. For our listeners, I want to thank you so much for being with us, and I look forward to being with you next week. Until then, take care. And God bless. Hold on the line, Bob. I'll be right with you.